The son of a woman murdered in her Thornbury bookshop 37 years ago has spoken about his anger after police botched the investigation. DNA evidence was mixed up, clearing a pedophile priest who was a key suspect.
For the past 16 years, detectives investigating the 1980 murder of Maria James have been on a wild goose chase.
Well, of course it's an embarrassment to us, you know, like, you know, it's really difficult because, and particularly for our investigators, you know, they've worked really hard. The exhibit used to eliminate suspects was in fact an exhibit from another case.
I'm Rachel Brown and this is Trace, an investigation into the unsolved murder of Maria James.
We're talking about the possibility that these priests have been involved with the murder of my mother. This brings a whole new order of magnitude to this case. There would be interested parties in this that would very much like it just to go away.
Male blood found on a pillow was used to rule out Father Bongiorno and others as suspects. But last episode, Trace revealed a terrible bungle. This pillow is actually from a different crime scene. Nothing to do with Maria James. And note here, in our last episode, we reported that it was a pillow slip that was the problem. It was actually the pillow itself. When Trace asked questions about Maria James's cold case box in July last year, Victoria Police said they'd be hard to answer. It'd mean a detective would have to sift back through that box. Maybe our probing led to the discovery of this mistake. Maybe the case would have been reviewed regardless. But either way, we finally know why this case has remained unsolved for so long. Victoria Police's admission came from its Assistant Commissioner, Stephen Fontana.
It was a mix-up with this particular matter in terms of a storage. It was stored adjacent to another exhibit.
Trace understands a pillow from a 1975 homicide cold case was sitting on a shelf beside Maria James's exhibits bag, then, at some point, put into this bag.
There were similar types of exhibits in both cases, and one ended up in the other, and they're appropriately sealed. There's no cross-contamination. It was just pure human error.
It's this foreign bloodied pillow that's proven to be this case's greatest distraction. The one piece of evidence police had relied on to keep suspects in the frame or rule them out was a worthless false clue. But that's not all. Ever since learning of this bungle, Mark James has been desperately seeking assurances from Victoria Police that his mum's exhibits are now being kept somewhere safe. And he's been dealt another knock. He's been told not only was the pillow added to his mum's exhibits bag, something else has been removed. A quilt.
The bag was part of mum's exhibits. It was labelled as Maria James' bloodstained quilt. And somehow the quilt has been taken out of that bag, and this pillow from another case altogether has been substituted in that bag.
Mark James says he now finds it harder to accept the explanation that the forensics mix-up was just an accident.
What if it was deliberate? And what if all of the killer's blood that was all over the place apparently, what if all of those exhibits are gone missing? I might never have an answer.
Mark's right. Without this potential evidence, we may never know who killed Maria James. I've seen a picture of this quilt in the photo book of the crime scene that day I was flicking through it with retired detective Ron Iddles. Ron Iddles told me there's a good chance some of the killer's blood would have been spilt during the attack.
Most times they will have an injury themselves because they go into this frenzied attack. Their hand slips off the handle of the knife down onto the blade.
So there's a chance the murderer's blood was on this quilt, which makes it a crucial piece of evidence. So how could it have gone missing? Trace understands the foreign pillow and Maria's exhibits bag had very similar reference numbers. It is feasible an officer thought the pillow belonged in Maria's bag. Now, regarding the missing quilt. As you heard last episode, in 1994, DNA evidence in up to 40 cold case murders was destroyed when exhibits were moved from police headquarters in the CBD to a new storage unit a couple of suburbs away. Victoria Police has said bloodied exhibits were destroyed in the interests of occupational health and safety. Perhaps this explains Maria's missing quilt. But Mark James is sceptical.
I would have thought, though, that if exhibits were destroyed, there would have been some records or notations to that effect to say, well, in this case, we are destroying, you know, these two exhibits because, you know, they're a concern. Even if it was just a simple note on the file or something like that.
And if this really was a biohazard issue, I can't understand why the bag the quilt was in wouldn't have also been destroyed, along with the bloodied pillow from the 1975 homicide. Since the last episode of Trace, I've submitted another list of questions to Victoria Police. And again, it's declined to comment. It says it can't, while investigations are still underway. Victoria Police has sent what remains of Maria James's exhibits to its forensics lab for retesting, in the hope these exhibits will yield a new DNA profile of the killer. Results should be known by mid-October. For the first time in more than 30 years, everyone's back in the frame.
The man police are looking for is in his late 30s to early 40s, about 166 centimetres, with dark receding hair and a medium build. He has become the prime suspect.
Mark James has been told police will first focus their efforts on a small group.
They've termed what they call the top five.
This top five will include Mario, the local loner, who argued with Maria about the sale of some comic books the morning of her death. Remember, police found twine in his backyard, similar to what Maria's hands were tied with. And there was the issue of a dry cleaner's receipt with a note about a possible bloodstain found on his trousers. Next, Mark James understands Peter, the real estate agent, might again be a suspect. Now, just a note here, this is a different Peter to the Peter who owned the real estate practice two doors down. And then there's a telecom worker.
They said that this telecom worker had been involved in other crimes, that he had been found in Queensland to have sexually assaulted two females, and he had some twine and a knife in his car.
The twine and the knife obviously caught police's attention. And remember Jeanette Hodson, the driver who nearly crashed into the suspected killer? Well, in the early days of the investigation, she picked this telecom worker out of a lineup. And this man did look similar to a police face fit of the killer, the face you've seen on our podcast image. But what of Jeanette Hodson's evidence? A recent Herald Sun article reports she later picked out a different man as the one she saw fleeing the crime scene. Suspect four is interesting, Peter Keogh. I'd heard his name in relation to the case but knew that he'd previously been ruled out by DNA, but given the pillow botch-up, Mark James says he's back in the frame. Peter Keogh killed his former partner, Vicky Cleary, stabbing her outside a kindergarten in 1987. Vicky's brother is Phil Cleary, a former federal MP and VFA footballer who's been campaigning on family violence and justice issues ever since. In fact, he was largely behind Ron Idle's decision in 2001 to test Maria James's exhibits for DNA.
Kept ringing up, so then I went and got all the exhibits retested. And we then identified, hang on a minute, we've got male blood, we've now got a profile, and from that I was able to eliminate Peter Keogh.
While I haven't been allowed anywhere near Maria's cold case file, Phil Cleary says years ago he spent days poring over it to check for signs of Peter Keogh's involvement.
Hi, Phil.
Good, how are you?
Much nicer day today than
Okay. And he's done his own research.
Haven't seen you for a long time.
Phil tells me Keogh's psychotherapist suspected him of Maria's murder. And so she wouldn't breach patient confidentiality, she told a colleague to tell police they should question him. There was also a 1982 Crime Stoppers call nominating Keogh as the murderer, which Phil says police never followed up on.
It's symbolic of the way the society dealt with violence against women.
Then Phil recounts a story he's heard secondhand from a source he can't name.
Keogh said to someone, "I killed Maria James." I think it was said in a skiting moment, and it was said to frighten someone, which doesn't mean he was telling the truth. He may have just been using it because he knew the person knew of the bookshop, but I am told reliably Keogh said, "I will do to you what I did to the woman in the bookshop."
I press Phil for his source, but he asks if I'd ever reveal my sources. Touché. So I can't corroborate this for you. I've asked Ron. He says Keogh's a long shot because no clear connection was ever proven between him and Maria. So there's an absence of a little thing called motive. It's worth noting here, Victoria Police has to devote attention to many suspects in this cold case. It can't afford to have tunnel vision. If criminal charges are laid against someone, any prior sustained focus on other suspects could be used by a defence lawyer as an exculpatory reason why their client should walk. So we want to make it really clear, we haven't had access to Maria James's cold case box. In that box, there could be evidence pointing to other suspects with equally compelling motives. This series has concentrated on fathers Buongiorno and O'Keefe because they have the strongest motives we've managed to find so far. Our central question has been, was Maria James murdered to cover up the sexual abuse of her son Adam? This is certainly Ron's gut feeling.
Adam sexually assaulted by the priest 2 days before. The priest has been in the pulpit box criticising Maria. Did Maria go and confront him over the fact that he'd sexually assaulted Adam? If that was the case, then he was going to be caught out. So you always look for a motive, and that was a pretty strong and possible motive.
Mark James has always been sceptical about Father Buongiorno's elimination as a suspect in his mum's death, despite an eyewitness account that the priest was seen covered in blood on the day of her murder. And now that bloodstains exhibits seem to have gone missing, Mark is surer still that something sinister has taken place.
I can't exclude the possibility that in the past a conspiracy had occurred. Now, if someone asked me if that could happen today, my answer would be definitely no. But in the past, the Catholic Church has been accused of covering things up. So I just can't exclude the possibility that there was some type of a cover-up.
Trace producer Kerry Ritchie put this question to the Assistant Commissioner Stephen Fontana at a Victoria Police press conference back in July.
As you know, there is a Catholic priest that is on
yes.
the suspect list.
Yeah.
Can you assure the family, who might be fearful that, you know, Catholic Church very powerful, that there could have been some sort of influence in that this might have been, you know, a deliberate act by someone? You say it's human error. How are you absolutely sure that...
Oh, no, this is a human error in relation to the... No, it's got nothing to do with the Catholic Church or any other, you know.
Journalism teaches you to be sceptical. You learn that if it's a choice between conspiracy and cock-up, 9 times out of 10, it's the latter. It'd take a lot to tamper with evidence. You'd need access to evidence rooms, you'd need to know exhibits' reference numbers. It's highly unlikely a conspiracy is behind the DNA bungle and missing evidence. But then again, it's not impossible. You only have to look at Dennis Ryan, the man who forced Victoria to face up to the existence of a group within its police force, colloquially known as the Catholic Mafia.
The Catholic Mafia was a group of diehard Catholics that unfortunately gave their allegiance to the Catholic cathedral, not to what they were sworn to do. Their loyalty was to the people of Victoria.
I visit him in Mildura, a long 6-hour drive northwest of Melbourne, to learn more about this era in the 60s and 70s and about the length certain officers would go to protect a paedophile priest. Dennis Ryan is 85 now, with a thin frame and a wry chuckle. He doesn't own a kettle, so to make tea he fills some mugs with water and carefully shuffles them one by one across the kitchen to the microwave. But back then, he was fierce. In 1971, he tried to bring charges against a pedophile priest, Father John Day, who was being protected by a cartel within Victoria Police.
You can't have children buggered and offences committed of them. That's the most disgusting. That's the conspiracy that went on in my time. It's a major conspiracy, and it engulfed the highest ranking officer in the police force down.
Dennis Ryan's accusations of the Catholic cartel's reach going all the way to the top is a view shared by the former Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police, Mick Miller. He told the Royal Commission his predecessor's office, Victoria's 15th Police Chief Commissioner Reg Jackson, had become corrupted by undue influence. Ryan's attempts to prosecute a case against pedophile priest Father John Day saw him ostracised within the Victorian police force, then hounded from it.
They failed to investigate. They failed to do their duty, which they were sworn to do. They conspired. What they did was criminal.
He can't comment on the Maria James case, of course. He left the job he loved 8 years before she was murdered. But he's certainly seen the worst in priests, as well as those intent on protecting them.
Well, the Royal Commission has shown, and I have shown in my former investigation, that they are capable of anything.
This culture of collusion Dennis speaks of rings true with the many emails I've received from listeners about the power of the church. And when it comes to the church's reach, one victim tells me after he reported his violent abuse, his medical records were deleted. Father Buongiorno was a big figure in the community, with a great deal of influence within the circles he travelled in. I've received emails claiming Father Buongiorno had powerful connections. Mark James wonders if these connections could be the reason behind his mum's quilt disappearing.
In a situation like this, the only way such interference with evidence could occur would be at the behest of some very powerful people.
Remember, by 1998, Father Buongiorno had been outed as a pedophile. As you heard in episode 2, he was sent to trial in 1996 for the sexual assault of 3 boys. He was acquitted, but soon after, a Victorian tribunal ruled he had committed child sex offences and awarded the victims compensation. The Maria James exhibits were tested for DNA in 2001, and we know by that time the red herring pillow was already in her evidence bag. I've always understood that Father Buongiorno didn't become a suspect until 2007. So, before 2001, there'd be no impetus for anyone to tamper with evidence possibly incriminating him, right?
I recall being called into the homicide squad. I believe it was late 98. Apparently, just before I had been in there, Father Buongiorno was called into the homicide squad.
See, my understanding was Ron Needles once told me that his understanding was that Father Buongiorno was only ever interviewed by detectives dealing with sex crimes.
I can definitely confirm 100% that Victoria Police have advised me very clearly that in 1998, August of 1998, Father Buongiorno was called into the homicide squad to be interviewed by...
We can't tell you the detective's name, but I've asked him about this interview. He doesn't remember it taking place.
The next obvious question is, why back then did detectives not ask you and Adam, given Father Buongiorno's history, whether you'd ever been assaulted by Father Buongiorno?
I can't understand why back then Adam or myself, but particularly Adam, weren't asked if we were his victims, because that would provide a potential motive. So I just can't understand that, and I can't reconcile it.
I just can't say confidently one way or another whether the Catholic Church would have, or even could have, interfered in this investigation. But it is something I'm continuing to look into. A and Mark James wants the coroner to do the same. He's hoping there'll be a decision soon on a new inquest.
There's just too many sus things going on here. You know, DNA bungle-ups, you know, evidence going missing, not sure if it's been destroyed, you know, being told different stories about what happened with those exhibits. You know, these are the types of things that I want the coroner to get to the bottom of.
I've checked in with the coroner's court. The James brothers' application to have their mother's initial inquest findings set aside so new facts and circumstances can be taken into account is still under consideration. We know that Victoria Police are retesting Maria James's exhibits, hoping to find the killer's DNA. If they do, I'm hoping they can compare it to the sample I'm still keeping safe, which used to belong to Father O'Keefe's twin brother, to see if this pedophile priest should be added to the suspect list. And I seem to be becoming a reluctant curator of DNA. Someone else has contacted me, offering something even stranger. He's a book dealer who had a cosy arrangement with removalist companies. They'd let him into shops and houses being gutted, and he could search for literary treasures. One of the shops he found himself in was Maria James's. He says he took a carload of books from a wardrobe that was being used as a bookcase.
It was just full of comics, magazines, old Playboys too, you know. I just remember seeing, you know, flicks of things across the edging of the front of the wardrobe. But then there definitely were books that had blood on them too, you know.
It may be Maria's blood, but there could also be specks from the killer. I was initially sceptical about all this. The book dealer went into Maria's old home 17 years after her murder. Would bloodied books be lying around after all that time? I'm intrigued to see where this goes. The book dealer has to rummage through a big storage facility to find these bloodied books.
Like a splatter of something on it or anything that could be helpful to you or the investigation.
When he does, he's promised to hand them over to police. Rest assured, we'll update you on that. This investigation has taken on a life of its own, and we have to wait and see if the coroner decides to reopen Maria's case or if Victoria Police find a trace of the killer's DNA. When they do, we'll bring you an update. So to everyone who's called or emailed in so far, thank you. The Trace team and I are grateful for your leads. And Mark and Adam James are blown away by your support. So, as always, please email us with any new leads to trace@abc.net.au or contact Crime Stoppers on 1800 333 000.
And I'm just hoping that, well, I'm looking at this podcast really as a final chance to get an answer as to what happens. In fact, I think that if this podcast doesn't succeed, it's never going to be solved.
While you're waiting for the next update from us here at Trace, there are two brand new ABC podcasts you should check out. Ladies We Need to Talk is a podcast for women, by women, that dives headfirst into some of those, shall we say, tricky topics that we don't talk about, but we really should. Like whether you need to worry about how much you're drinking, and whether it's normal for you to regret having your kids, and why talking about periods still makes us squeamish. Also from the ABC is How Do You Sleep at Night, which tells the stories of people who live their lives in the face of judgment and explores the different moral codes we all live by. You'll meet a big tobacco lobbyist, game hunters, a killer, a stock market manipulator, and more. You can listen to both these shows wherever you get your podcasts, or find them and exclusive extras on the new ABC Listen app.